It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Tomorrow, OTAs. Commanders will probably be in the bubble because it's supposed to rain all day. But be out there at practice. Very excited to see it. 2025 season, we're hoping, is as magical as 2024 was. But what are some of the big inhibitors to potential success? A couple came up in a conversation that we had on Take Command on our mailbag edition of the show to get the week started, which we share with you because it is very interesting. We'll take your calls on it still to come as well here on The Hoffman Show.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Take Command podcast on a mailbag Monday. Happy Memorial Day. I hope everyone's getting to rest, relax, enjoy a long weekend and ultimately a short week. But we don't stop working. We got a mailbag full of questions to answer. Logan Paulson, as I'm Craig Hoffman. How you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. Excited for Memorial Day. You know, excited to hang out with the family a little bit and also hang out with you, which is always a good time. So
yeah, always
very
good
fitting to do a mailbag on Memorial Day Monday.
Yeah, so love just getting to sit around, talk ball, enjoy it. It's not like it's nice outside right now. Anyway, it's supposed to be nice later, but it's like rainy and blah right now. So like, hope that clears up for your barbecue. Anyway, the point is we have questions. We got a wide receiver two question that I'm very excited to get deep in the weeds on in a second. But we're going to start off, Logan, with something that you in our production meeting called the most important question of the offseason slash perhaps the most important question of the season. It starts as a question from Ben, who listens to this show and the radio show and said a bunch of nice things and then said, I've been meaning to ask this since the schedule has been released. The strength of our schedule is obviously increased. We are playing much higher caliber teams and more primetime opportunities as opposed to last year. While I don't think the Commanders will necessarily take a step backwards, I do believe we may win less games. In my opinion, we will most likely get anywhere between 9 and 11 wins next season. While not bad, it's going to be harder for Jaden to follow up the year he just had. Do you agree with that? Are we going to necessarily be worse, but we may, or you, do you agree that while we are not necessarily going to be worse, we may win less games? And do you think by winning less games, people may claim Jaden is having a sophomore slump when in reality, the quality of teams we are playing is just better? Thanks again. Love the show. Keep up the good work. We also, Logan, got a similar question from Tim on Instagram who said, while the team has raised the floor, do you think the national media is too high on the Commanders for this year? This is a team that wildly outperformed expectations last year, but has a much harder schedule this year and not the level of talent of the Eagles. So that was a lot of reading of words, Logan.
Yeah.
Is the strength of schedule, does it scare you?
So this is a really good question. It's a really good thought experiment. I think just for anything you're doing in life is like last year, like the thing that I had a special teams coach used to say this to me is past performance is not indicative of future results, right? So like last year was obviously a fantastic year. Jaden Daniels was amazing. The offense was amazing. The defense, I think, played above kind of what the national media's expectation was. The offensive line, same thing. And I think you saw kind of an understanding of that by Adam Peters specifically and going out and kind of making additions to the offensive line. We've talked about how I think the defensive additions are going to elevate the group in a way because they're going to just do what they're supposed to do and it's going to elevate the floor of that group. However, like because you're playing quote unquote better football teams, and you always do a great job of kind of pointing this out, you don't know like now how this, right, how the schedule is going to look at. But even if the teams weren't quote unquote better, like what some of the stuff they did last year is very, very high variance. You know, like, and what I mean by that, it's I keep going back to the fourth down conversion percentage, right? Like 87%, like that's diabolical. Like that's like an insane number to be thinking about, right? It's better than the tush push. It's better than all these great fourth down plays. And I look at that and I say to myself, like, that's going to go back to the mean. That's going to go, even if it decreases by 15%.
Yeah, even like if it's what the best fourth down offense is in a normal year, that was the best number since they basically started tracking the stat like 25 years ago or whatever it is.
Yeah, which is crazy, right? Same thing for third down percentages. I want to say they were third, but it's still 45%, which is very, very high. So you're not going to be able to possess the football as long. You're not going to be able to have as many bites as the apple. So like there is going to be a regression there, right? I look at Jaden Daniels' passing numbers, efficiency numbers, like they're still crazy high. And I don't care how good he is. Like, I expect that to come back to baseline a little bit. He'll still be playing well, I'm sure. He'll still protect the football, I'm sure. But what does that variance do to the offense? Then you say to yourself, okay, well, Adam Peters has gone out and brought in Laremy Tunsil. They've drafted Josh Connerly. Like, that should allow them to be a little bit more efficient running the football. They're going to be in more advantageous second down situations. Does that allow them to offset some of that variance you're seeing in the third down and fourth down regressions? Like, maybe, I would think so, but you don't know until you get there, right? Schematically, are they able to elevate offensively with the Jaden Daniels run game to offset some of that regression? Is Deebo Samuel's ability to create explosive plays on his own ability to going to offset that regression? Like, so those are the types of questions that I've been kicking around for weeks now, and I don't really have a great answer because, again, they got to go out and play the games. And I'm sure that one of the reasons Adam Peters was so aggressive with some of this stuff is because he understands that, right? I think Dan Quinn understands that. You need to get a more talented team to help offset some of these higher variance statistics, right? Can we be more consistent on first down? Like, that's a very rock solid statistic. Can we be more consistent on second down? Those metrics tend to be more consistent from a mathematical standpoint. So that's where I'm looking at this offseason specifically is like, yeah, strength of schedule has improved. How do you make sure that you're still an effective football team? It's when these other metrics regress, can we improve in other areas? Can we improve an explosive play percentage? I think they've taken steps to do that. It just depends on how much they're able to actualize that, I guess, is the thing that I keep coming back to. And I don't have a great answer because I haven't seen them play yet. I haven't seen them practice. We won't see that till Wednesday. But that's what I think the strength of schedule question is so interesting. The Jaden Daniels regression question is so interesting because, yes, there will be a regression in some of these statistics, right? But does that mean he's playing any worse than he was last year? Probably not. But it might express itself as this sophomore slump, which I think is kind of tough for fans to understand. Like, even though he's playing well, it might not be as well mathematically as it was last year, which I think is the thing I'm having a hard time negotiating.
Yeah, let me try to unpack that more, because when you say it like that and you try to, like, if you say that sentence out loud, it kind of makes no sense. It's like, he could be playing as well, but he won't be playing as well. And it's like, what?
Yes,
How does that work? If you go through the same exact process on your end of it, but the defense's rush is better and there's more tip balls. Okay, that's more incompletions. Tip balls, both at the line of scrimmage, tip balls at the catch point. Like, okay, those, Jaden has done the same process, but the results are not as good. If he is taking more sacks because the pass rushes are better, because you're facing the Lions with Aiden Hutchinson, for instance, in week 10, like that obviously is going to impact the statistics. If you have balls that maybe last year went through guys' hands and fell incomplete because you had defensive backs on the other side who weren't as good as some of the ones you'll be playing this year, and those turn into interceptions, you lose bites at the apple. Your process is very similar, but the results are not as good. And those types of things obviously are very dependent on, like, the opportunities that you present the other team to make plays and their ability to convert on them. That's what makes good football players, is they convert on their opportunities. By the same token, they brought in guys to help raise what's going on here. And Jaden, hopefully with another, you know, yes, the league will have film on him, but he also has film on the league. And I'm sure they're spending some time anticipating what some of the changes might be. To me, this is like one of the advantages of having a defensive head coach, where there's a ton of advantages for continuity's sake to having an offensive head coach. If I'm Dan Quinn, I'm having a lot of meetings with Cliff this offseason, being like, if I was trying to stop you based off what we did last year, here are some of the things. Let's be prepared to have our curveball ready to go. Let's have plan B ready to go. So, like, how does that process go? How smooth is it to get to the other things? How big is the bag that they have? Because obviously they were able to stay within a bag that Jaden performed really well at last year. Then you add in the personnel on this side of it. You know, he's running for his life at times last year because Brandon Coleman, as he gets banged up later in the year, his performance falls off. Now that's Laremy Tunsil. Sweet. That is better. The run game just died in the second half of last year from injuries and whatever else. And maybe this year it's better. Maybe this year it's worse. Who knows? Like, we just, you know, you face better run defenses, for instance. So there's just a lot of stuff that is circumstantial. Like, this is why football is so hard. Basketball, you know, there's just less people on the floor. Baseball, it's all these individual things. That's why the statistical revolution in baseball was so dramatic, was because every single pitch in a lot of ways is an ice, or is as isolated of an incident as you can have in sports. And so there's just too many factors to try to guess intelligently. And the second you figure something out, a coach makes an adjustment, a guy gets hurt, like, these things change. And so that's, hopefully, I think at least at the beginning of that ramble, I answered the, how do you play better or the same and also play worse at the same time question. But I think when you get into some of these variables and the variance of it all and some things that go your way, like, I think there's a lot of things where the Commanders can keep the pressure on and still be very, very good at a lot of the high variance things that were super high last year. But statistical, you know, regression, math, averages, science says that eventually they're going to come back down to earth in some of those areas.
Yeah, and I think the thing I called attention to there, which I think is great, is the schematic element. Obviously, like, on paper, you've made these additions with certain people, right? And Laremy Tunsil is better than Brandon Coleman, right? And Brandon Coleman moving a guard makes the offensive line better. And you can kind of do that math. But also, I think, like, seeing what Cliff did and seeing what Joe Wood Jr. did and seeing what he could do with more consistent pieces in the defense, like, again, I think there's going to be an improvement there. I think the offense will be better. I think the defense will be better. I think the question is, like, how much you're going to see that in terms of wins and losses. Like, because, again, you're playing better quarterbacks. You're playing better defensive coordinators. Like, I think about the Minnesota Vikings and how befuddling that defense has been to top-flight quarterbacks over the course of the last 2 years, right? So I look at since Flores has been there, really, and I think to myself, like, how do you handle that? Like, again, and this offense that Cliff has presented is befuddling, and I look at Jaden Daniels and his ability and what he did in the playoff game and how sharp he looked, and I know they lost the game, but, like, how that moment wasn't too big from him. Like, I just think, like, as a player, it's really hard to be up for 17 weeks of football. It's really, really challenging to do that. And so last year, I'm not saying there were, like, easy games, like, because they're not. They're all tough. It's just the level of difficulty is ramped up a little bit. So can Cliff be locked in for 17 weeks? Can Joe Wood Jr. be locked in for 17 weeks? And most importantly, can the staff support Jane Daniels to be locked in for 17 weeks? Because one of the questions was asking about the primetime games. Like, I know Jaden is, like, built different, right? But, like, the mental fatigue that presents is really, really challenging. And I think we saw that a little bit with Houston and C.J. Stroud. Like, they ran it back. They had this great offensive innovator in Bobby Slowick. C.J. Stroud was, like, the second coming of, you know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. Like, that's the way it looked. But the offensive line took a regression from a schematic standpoint, and that affected C.J. Stroud in a negative way. And C.J. Stroud was still very productive. But people look at it and said, oh, he had a down year. But I'm like, there are mitigating circumstances to that. Data set, right?
Yeah, and so for CJ specifically, it was compounding, right? Like, right. He started off the year still playing at a high level despite the circumstances, and eventually he just kind of broke. Like, he started missing throws. He's spraying throws that he used to hit. Also, he's got no one to throw to because Tank is hurt, Diggs gets hurt, Collins is hurt. Yeah. And so, like, it became a thing where CJ was, you know, playing through it until the moment that he wasn't.
Yeah, I think that's that again, and that's the thing is, like, and I don't think anybody thought that Bobby Slowick was going to take a regression like that in terms of schematically elevating the way he did the year prior. So I think that's the other thing, like you talked about, Ken Cliff stay in his bag, continue to innovate, find new wrinkles for the offense. I think you brought up a great point. Like, that's the thing that Dan does such a great job of is self-scouting. Can they take advantage of this time? But I think that's where this next, I think there's a lot of fans that are really, and they should be really excited. This is an exciting time to be a Washington Commanders fan. But in my mind, I'm always like, man, there's all these things that they need to make sure they're checking the boxes of. And as that list gets longer and longer and longer, and even something we haven't talked about is, like, on paper, the offensive line should be better. But like we talked about with Golic, like that group needs to gel. Sometimes the best individual offensive lineman does not make the best five. Like, they just don't communicate well. They don't get along well, whatever it is. Like, some of the best offensive lines I played with were guys, like, in 2012, that offensive line was fantastic. And if you went through and looked at all of them, you're not like, oh my gosh, these guys are all pro Hall of Fame guys. No, it's guys that just played really well together and knew each other. Like Tyler Palumbus played right tackle. Like Corey Lichtensteiger played right guard for that team, right? He weighed like 265 pounds at some points that year, and he's a great football player, but nobody's like, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame is Corey Lichtensteiger. Like, no. They just played
they well had together. Trent and everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's something. And Trent was still young at the time. You know, he wasn't kind of the dominant, you know, monolith for the position that he is now yet. He was close. I'm not trying to diminish what Trent was when he was here. But
yeah,
but I think that's stuff that's all so challenging. You mentioned how challenging is football. But when fans bring me this question, these are things like, how does the O-line come together? Does Cliff continue to improve? Does Joe Witt continue to improve? Does the free agency personnel along the defensive line play the way I think they're going to play? These are all questions that need to be answered. And then how do you handle tighter games? That's the other thing that we haven't even talked about is with more primetime games, right, there's pressure. But when you're playing better football teams, every week you're kind of walking that razor's edge. And the team did a great job of that last year. But it's going to be even more acute because good teams are used to winning in late game scenarios. So end of half scenarios, 2-minute situation, red zone becomes a little bit more difficult. How do you handle that? And then people say, well, that doesn't really affect Jaden, but it does because he's going to have to perform in those situations the way a top five type quarterback does in the NFL. And if he doesn't, like a lot of people are like, oh, look, he's regressed. But again, I don't know if that's necessarily fair because the standard has improved so dramatically because of the opponents, because of the quarterbacks, because of the quality of the team.
The good news is they did all that stuff last year at a high level. Yeah. And you know, it feels impossible that they're going to be that good again. Like, are you going to win? What was it, 7 straight games in the final offensive possession? Like, that's ridiculous, but they have experience doing it. And Jaden has experience and there's a high level of belief. And ultimately, like I've said this before too, I think on this show and certainly on the radio show, I'd rather have these problems than like the Giants problems or one of these teams, the Browns problems. Like I don't want those problems. I don't want we don't know who our quarterback is, where our schedule is not that hard, but we're also not that good problems. Like this is the burden of being a good team. The right. Ravens don't complain about their schedule. The Chiefs don't complain about their schedule. The Bills don't complain about their schedule. They go out and they play it and they win most of the games because they're better. And that is the echelon that the Washington Commanders 2 years into the Jaden Daniels era find themselves in. Athletic Football Show.
That point you bring up there is the crux of it, right? Is like they did it for 1 year. Good teams do it year on year. And so how do you build a team and build a mindset, a cultural mindset to get that done? I think that's the thing. Maybe that is the underlying question to all of this, right? Is are you ready to be a consistently good football team? Because it's different. It's different to do it once and do it multiple years in a row. And I think that to me is maybe the underlying, we talk about analytics and data and guys coming together and offensive innovation, but really, are you ready as a team and as a staff to be good year on year for the next 5 years while Jaden Daniels is on his rookie contract?
Yeah, and it's organizational too. It's like, is everybody, like people that we don't even know exist, are they doing their jobs at a high level? Like that's kind of the secret sauce of it. And, you know, I was about to say the Athletic Football Show is doing their like, questions of the buy or sell series, and they're lumping all the teams together. I'm pretty sure they have the Commanders in the contenders tier. Like they're already there. And you know, you got all these national rankings starting to come out about quarterbacks and Jaden, you know, Mike Clay from ESPN, you know, had his fantasy rankings. Jaden's number one quarterback. Mina Kimes did her quarterback ranking show with Ollie Connolly. And after the big four, Jaden came off the board fifth. And like, I think that's the correct answer. I think I think he is the best quarterback in the NFC. And that automatically is going to put you in contention because you have the best quarterback in the conference. And the Eagles are great, better roster. I'd rather be the Eagles just roster-wise, the whole of the talent, the way the pieces fit together, the strength on the lines of scrimmage. But Jaden is fantastic. I don't think any team acquired a player in the offseason better than Laremy Tunsil, any team anywhere in the whole league. And if you frame it that way, it is very easy to be optimistic. So you're telling me you got the best quarterback in the conference, just got one of the three best left tackles in the sport. And also there's a trickle down that we hope is going to affect the rest of the offensive line positively. And they're going to be more consistently up front defensively. Like if I tell you those three things, then off a team that was 12-5 and went to the NFC Championship game last year, then it's really easy to be like, okay, I feel great about this Washington Commanders team. But you, I think it's also easy to pick apart, like, okay, well, how did they go 12-5 last year? They wildly overperformed expectations. They had historical greatness in very high variance areas. Like, there's a lot of ways you can pick it apart. And that is, I think, more than anything else, Logan, like, that's May in the NFL. Unless you are a team that is DOA, where you're just like, our roster is not good enough at all. There's no real hope that our quarterback is good. And so, like, basically, sorry, Cleveland, it's kind of the Browns, right? There is almost no scenario where you look at the Cleveland Browns in 2025 and they're good.
Right.
And okay. But like the Titans even are looking at Cam Ward and they're like, what if he's Jaden Daniels?
Right.
Like every other team in the league, you could, if you squint hard enough, you could see how it goes sideways and how it goes great. And it's just playing the percentages in terms of, you know, if you're betting on the over-unders of which way you think it's going to go.
But I think that this is a great point that you brought up, maybe by accident. But I think you look at the teams in the NFL that have like the guys, you know, you look at your Josh Allen, you look at your Lamar Jackson, you look at your Patrick Mahomes, you look at your Joe Burrows, right? The big four, like they're going to be good. They're going to find a way to be good, especially if Cincinnati gets the defense fixed, right? And so I think maybe that, that is maybe, you know, we talked about, is the team ready to be consistently good? Is Jaden Daniels ready to be that guy? You know, because we talk about Josh Allen all the time. We talk about Joe Burrow too. Like it took those guys a couple years to kind of figure it out. You know, Josh Allen was a 3-year cycle. Lamar was kind of like that year and a half kind of learning curve. And so it does take time to kind of like be a consistent winner and be that dominant force in the NFL. And so maybe that's another question I have is like, that's a big ask for a young guy. And I, I was just thinking about it when we were getting ready for the show. I have never been more impressed with a rookie football player in my entire life watching a team. Like he was that good. But it's a different thing to take it from that 1 year and say, I'm going to be, again, I'm going to say Tom Brady, whoever, insert your
Peyton Manning. Let's say Mahomes, because the one guy who didn't need time was Mahomes. Like
he sat for a year, but
he sat for a year. He was good in the one game he played, but then he comes in year two and like it was very different for him because year one of him playing, year two of him in the league, like he was doing a lot of running around with a chicken with his head cut off. They had also a lot of deep stuff.
Was pretty good.
The roster was great. He was just throwing the ball long to Tyreek. Like it's going great for him. And then he has become this like super computer, just dice you all over the place. The offense is way more structured now. So he's evolved as a player. And Jaden had stretches like that last year where he's just making stuff up, making it happen, Sandlot style.
Incredible. Like again, like we said, like there's nobody like we love him and there's nobody better, right? In terms of like rookie performance, but it's a different level to go and be, I'm consistently this guy now. I'm the guy that's going to make $70 million in 5 years. Like it's a different ball of wax. And so I think, is the team ready? Really, is he ready? And again, like every indication would say yes, but like that's the, I mean, ultimately that's like what we're talking about.
And I think my optimism for him comes from the fact that like when he did that stuff, it's because he had to for the most part. I mean, he's vacating empty pockets and stuff occasionally, but every quarterback does that. Like Lamar does that. But when he was allowed to sit back in the pocket, he was awesome in structure too.
Yeah.
And so that's what gives me, I think, the hope that it's going to be really, really good and there's not going to be a huge regression. But what does that mean for the team? What does that mean for the win total based off of the opponents, based off of where the rest of the roster is? I think that's a giant TBD because it's May and the season doesn't start till September.
It's May. We haven't even watched a practice yet. So like this is, but these are concerns. These are questions that we all have. And I think it's good to talk about them. The thing that I go back to is always like Vegas is really good at predicting win-loss totals. They're at 8.5 right now. And I think they've looked at these questions and they probably say like mathematically, like even the one score game thing, I forgot about that when we were talking at the top of the show. Like that is a statistic that every year regresses to the mean, right? You don't normally win 7 out of 8. It's pretty much 50-50 all the time, right? So if that regresses and they lose 3 more games, like you're almost, you know, you're, what is that? You're at 9 right there just off of that.
Yeah. So there's 8.5. You're over, but not by much.
Yeah. And again, like that doesn't mean, and again, like with the fourth down thing, like there's a couple things in there that make you go, okay, but that's, and I'm really glad you brought this up. That's where the Cliff, that's where the Joe Witt Jr., that's where the offensive defensive staffs come in and really drive this thing. So ultimately, like I think this, it kind of sits on like, if I had to say 3 things, it's Jaden Daniels, it's the offensive staff, like can you get that elevation, and like how the team gels. And I know that's kind of a soft kind of eval, but like I'll tell you, man, some of the best teams I played on were just They just figured it out. They just gelled in the right way. And I can't really give you the magic formula for why or why not it does happen. But I will say, if there's a guy that I'm going to bet on that's going to make it happen, it's Dan Quinn. And like, because we talked about this a ton, like his ability to create culture, to create locker rooms, to create cohesion is extremely high. And you've got guys like Zach, you've got guys like Bobby, you've got guys like Austin that have been there, done that. And Jaden Daniels as a leader in his own right now.
Debo knows nothing but success in San Francisco until last season, basically.
So like, if you can get it all together, and if there's one guy that can stir it up and make it happen, it's Dan Quinn. So again, I'm probably leaning over just because I trust him so much. I trust the character and composition of Jaden Daniels, but I think there's a lot of questions about it, you know, just from a math standpoint that make you say, hey, and again, like he might be, Jaden Daniels might be better this year. He might have a higher percentage of big time throws. He might be better in terms of big time throws on first down, or, you know, average depth of target, some of those advanced kind of quarterback metrics, but they might lose less games. And so I think that's ultimately what you're at. And I kind of expect them to lose. I expect to lose more games, excuse me. And I expect them to lose more games, but can they make the playoffs? And then can you make a run? And that's really what I'm kind of hoping for as a Commanders fan this year.
And like you said, we haven't even watched a practice yet, but we watch one on Wednesday. So we'll know everything, all the answers by Thursday. So make sure you tune in later. All right, so you heard me and Logan break it all down there. The schedule and some of the very specific ways the Commanders found success in 2024, now going to be more difficult in 2025. You buying that? You selling that? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. How concerned are you about how difficult the road ahead is for the Commanders? We take your calls next. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. But right now, I look like I'm about to tell ghost stories because I had to adjust my light. And as I realized I was doing that on camera, wah-ha-ha-ha.
I think the hat also helps.
Yeah, it captures everything. It really gets me a ghost story. I'm like, how do I make a ghost story out of the Commander's schedule? Deep. In the forests of Ashburn, Virginia. I don't know. A team prepares for a season that's going to be hard. And somewhere 30 miles away, a radio host sucks at telling ghost stories. All right. You just heard Logan and I talk about the schedule, but it's also how the schedule interacts with what this team was in 2024, right? It's, if we're being honest, which is everyone's favorite thing, the Commanders had a fairly improbable 2024 season, right? And I don't just mean like they had the number two pick. It worked out. He had the best rookie season ever. Most of their free agent stuff hit. They were able to overcome some of the things that didn't hit. They had decent enough injury luck for long enough. And also, did I mention that number two pick thing, having the most ridiculous rookie season that we've ever seen from a quarterback? Like, I'm not talking about the improbability just of the story. They had the best fourth down percentage in 30-something years in the NFL, conversion-wise, on a pretty high volume. They went for it a lot, and they converted 87%, I think it was. That's preposterous. Their third down percentage was good. They had a bunch of other things. You know, their two-point percentage was high. Like, they had a bunch of stuff. Their record in one-score games, I mean, what was it, 7 games in a row, Anthony decided on the final offensive possession for Washington or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was the last 5
or so. So they were awesome situationally. And year over year, those things tend to not sustain. The best predictor of how good you'll be year over year is success rate on first and second down in the first half. Because that tells a lot about who you truly are on the repeatable parts of your offense. Now, obviously, that comes with its own set of caveats when you're talking about year over year, because if your quarterback changes or you have a major personnel change or whatever, like, those numbers can shift. But it is easier to predict the first and second down success in the first half than it is third down situations, what's going to happen in late game situations, on down the list of things that we deem situational football.
And so I think you can take an optimist or a pessimist view because it's May and we don't have any idea how this is going to go yet. You want the optimist or the pessimist view first, Anthony?
I want the optimistic view.
So you want me to rain on the parade at the end? Thanks. Although this is probably good. We would never get a second chance to make a first impression. So the optimist view is actually fairly simple. The biggest driver of or the two biggest drivers of success of their situational excellence last year were Jaden Daniels, who theoretically should be even better in year two, and the fact that they practice the hell out of situations. They practice situational football more than any team that Logan was ever on or around, that Santana, that Smoot, like all those guys that we hear talk about football that have played in the last 25 years of the NFL. All those dudes that played for all those different coaches and all those different organizations and franchises have never, including, by the way, Logan Paulson with Dan Quinn, who practiced it more than anywhere else in his career when he was with him in 2017 in Atlanta or 2016 in Atlanta. Nobody has ever seen the amount of situational work that the Commanders put in. So you can call it a fluke based off the percentages. And there is undoubtedly an element of, let's call it luck, to their success. But there's also real substance behind their success. And so you have this quarterback who tends to break defenses in those situations, combined with a team that is ready for those situations. And I would be kind of surprised, frankly, and this is not me being an optimist, this is me being a realist. I would be surprised if the Commanders aren't one of the best third and fourth down teams in the NFL in 2025, offensively, because they're built for it. The pessimist view is you're now facing significantly harder opponents. And so some of the excellence you had in those situations where the rubber meets the road, they got a, I don't know how to extend the rubber and the road analogy. Now are we in monster trucks and they got a bigger truck? Like we used to run over some Ford Pintos and VW Bugs. And now it's like, oh, they have a monster car too. They have a rally truck. We're going to run into each other and we might come out okay, but we might catch some damage, as opposed to we're just going to run over that little thing that's in our way. And so that is the pessimist view, is you have these stats that are highly variable to begin with. There is almost, just based off math, no chance of repeating the success you had last year anyway. And now the fight is going to be fair. You're not facing Carolina. You're not facing some of the worst teams in the league. Shoot, even the quote-unquote bad teams that you are facing, the teams that you have to face based off division, right? You have your own. The Giants front seven is nasty. You have the Bears were the last place team in the NFC North last year, and they are probably going to be better. You have the AFC West. I mean, okay, who's the worst team in the AFC West? Is it the Raiders, who now have Geno Smith on offense and Pete Carroll guiding the defense? Like, you just don't have a lot of layups on the schedule. And so I think that is where you can, if you want to have concern and you like getting worked up over things you can't control, that's a good one to do in May. And I think the biggest question about this Commander season and how successful it can be is the competition and the way the razor thin margins that they won games on last year, feeling impossible to repeat just a year later.
All right, so I think my question is twofold. One, why are we failing to realize what we did in the playoffs? I understand like the playoffs is separate of the regular season, but who's to say, you know, the teams, the better teams that we face in the playoffs, we don't play up to we play up to their level. And some of those teams like the Bears, some teams like the Saints, some teams like who else was not good on our schedule? We played down to the level of competition. And the thing is, Craig, we see this all the time in the NFL. We've seen the Raiders go out there and beat the Ravens. I mean, we saw the Raiders beat the Ravens last year. And we're like, how did the Raiders go out here and destroy the Ravens like that? And it's because it's a week-to-week league. And then also, sometimes teams just don't get up for, you know, those lesser team games kind of thing. So I think when it came down to us, you know, having to play those better teams. The Bucks the second time around. We weren't ready the first time around. The second time, we were ready. We played the Lions last year. Everybody was scared about this high-powered offense. And, you know, they probably did have a bad day. But at the same token, we were ready for the test. The Eagles, all right.
Who else was ready for them?
Yeah. So I'm just, I think we play up to, I think when I look at this season, I think we just can't play, we can't pick and choose when we want to play up to, you know, a team's level or play down to a team's level.
Well, and that's the thing is, right, if you have an off week, because you can say like, oh, did they play down to some teams? I guess there might have been one or two. You know, you certainly didn't play well enough against the Giants in week two. You certainly didn't play well enough against, like, you didn't take care of advantage of opportunities against the Cowboys. That's a good one. And then the Bears, too. Like, you know, they weren't very good. They hadn't been broken yet.
We're struggling with execution.
But, like, the Commanders dominated that game, and then all of a sudden the Bears are up, and then the Hail Mary happens, and then the Bears weren't up anymore. But you do that against other teams. You know, and by the way, you play perfectly fine against Carolina without Jaden. Right, you house them. It was 40-7 or whatever it was. So like they also had plenty of days where they just flat out took care of business. And it's like, okay, the margin for error is just that much slimmer. And again, I come down on the, like, my true opinion is I come down on the optimist side of this. I think that when you have one of them dudes and five is one of them dudes, not that the other stuff doesn't matter, it's just, it matters less than having him. He will make you right more weeks than not. Having him, and if he's healthy for 17, I don't want to say guarantees you, because, I mean, Joe Burrow last year, the Bengals defense was so bad that they couldn't get out of their own way. But even then, they finished at 9-8, didn't they? Like, if Jaden is really in that class with Burrow, Mahomes, Allen, and Lamar, they're winning 9 games. Now, the rest of it gets to tell you how much better than 9 they get. But if he's actually that good, which I think that he is, and he's built like that, you win 9. And so it's going to come down to, you know, can you do all that stuff? And is he that good? Is he that much of a killer on fourth down? Is he that much of a killer in third down situations? Will he stare down the barrel of blitzes again and just, hey, Terry, you're out there. Terry's out there somewhere. Find it. And so those are the things that I wonder. I think they are built, for whatever it's worth, also to not have to live in some of those high leverage situations as much as they did last year. They thrived in high leverage situations. They also were in a ton of them. I think this is a football team that is built to win on first and second down in a much more sustainable way this year. The way they built the offensive line, and frankly, the way they built the defensive line to be better against the run, I think this is a more sustainable football team. But we're not going to know that until September. And I repeat, it is May. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, the age-old question that we ask on Tuesdays or Mondays, whenever we're coming off a weekend, what else happened this weekend? We take a look around the world of sports. Plenty of other stories, if you will, next on the Hoffman Show. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too. At the Team 980. We're 100 days from the NFL season kicking off, and there's some fun prop bets of the first to 100, let's say, completions, 100 catches, 100 tackles, all that fun stuff. Anthony's got a list. We're going to put our bets in coming up at 6 p.m. Also, tomorrow on the show, Commander's minority partner Mark Ein is going to be with us. Of course, also the chair of the Mudbala City Open. So we will talk to Mark tomorrow on the show amidst everything else that we have going on with OTAs being a feature presentation tomorrow as well. As for right now, what else happened this weekend? Also known as our weekend in review, which is brought to you by
Mr. Craig Hoffman.
Yes.
Nobody.
Yes, uh-oh. Oh, you just...
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, man.
Oh. You know, there's actual good news for the Nationals last weekend. This weekend, it came to a bit of a halt. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Giants, but much more competitive. Obviously, won the game on Saturday. Won the game on Sunday. And then yesterday, the 3-2 loss. That was after they swept the Braves and swept the Orioles. So they had been in a super bad way before that. Losers of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row. 8 of 9, but then we're able to flip it around, a 5-game winning streak, and then they will take their show on the road to the Mariners tonight. I will say, I want to see if I can find time this week in the show to talk about the piece that Ken Rosenthal wrote in The Athletic about how the Nationals should now be included in discussions of Major League Baseball's bottom feeders. It's a very interesting article because, Anthony, it's not like, yes, based off win losses, and yes, based off some of the scouting errors that they've made, but also they have all this young talent that is about ready to bubble up to the surface. And a lot of the premise of the article is that they're not going to be able to retain any of it because a bunch of them are Scott Boras guys, and we know how that goes in terms of the highest bidder and them wanting to get to free agency and not being able to sign extensions. And so will Mike Rizzo be forced to trade some of these guys? It's just a very interesting premise because I think and it like crushes the learners for not having spent money. And I think that clearly the learners have said, we're going to not be very good right now. And so while we're not very good, we are just going to take very minimal payroll and save a bunch of money. And from a business standpoint, I get that, even if it absolutely sucks for fans. And I don't think it's the way you should run a sports team, especially one with no salary cap. But the Nationals have the number one overall pick coming up in the draft. And so how does that affect, you know, do they take like a college pitcher who's more major league ready or a high school kid? Like, there's a lot of stuff that's getting going on in that article. And so maybe like Friday or something, we can have Toby pop over. Toby Altizer, of course, you guys know from 106.7 The Fan and our Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast. And maybe have Toby talk about that with us here on the show. But Nats this weekend, losers of 2 out of 3. But at least we are far away from that 7-game skid just a couple of weeks ago. Road Warriors, that's what the Washington Spirit are, Anthony. They got another win this weekend. They are 5-0-0 on the road. 5-0-0.
Oh.
That's crazy.
And what is their home record?
1-3-1. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is hard to win on the road in the National Women's Soccer League, and they have done it. Not tied. Not just you. If when you're on the road, like, hey, let's get a point and get out of here. Nope. Those Goobers are out there beating Seattle Friday night, 2-1 win, and they are 5-0-0 on the road. That keeps them in the top part of the table going into the international break. There is a ton of Spirit players who are playing internationally this weekend, including Tara McKeown for the U.S. Women's National Team. They'll take on China on Saturday in a friendly. Season resumes June 8th at home against North Carolina. Mystics this weekend, man, gotta close games. Two tough losses. And the more I watch this team, the more I realize just how big of a deal the Georgia Amor injury was. Like, there is so clearly Anthony on the Washington Mystics right now. We'll talk about them more tomorrow as they host the Fever in Baltimore. But there's such a point guard size hole on this team. And hopefully they can get everybody right. Hopefully, you know, Shakir Austin's coming back soon from the concussion. Aaliyah Edwards back in the lineup. Great to see. Slam only missed one game with whatever was going on with her leg. But just late in these games, although they're playing really well, Sonia Citron is the current favorite for Rookie of the Year. Kiki Iriafin is probably second in Rookie of the Year voting right now. It's the third rookie, Georgia Amor, who they're missing, where they just need a point guard at times to get them organized. I mean, they had 18 turnovers in the first half against Phoenix. 18 on Sunday.
It's a lot, man.
Not ideal. So hopefully they can get that straightened out. Anything else that happened this weekend? Oh, Formula One was in Monaco. The two-stop pit strategy deal was better than previous Monaco Grand Prix, but still, you literally can't pass anybody because the cars are too big and the road is too small. That's a problem for a race. They got to figure that out. The cars are getting smaller based off regulations next year. Anything else happened this weekend, Anthony? Now time for the, hey, Anthony, was there any boxing this weekend update?
No, there's a big boxing weekend this weekend, though.
But you know what that's for?
That's for the weekend preview.
Which is brought to you by?
The same person that sponsors this one. Nobody, sir.
No, nobody. When we get back, a segment that's also not sponsored, it's 6 o'clock. We're going to be talking about some of the odds-on favorites to be the first to accomplish 100 things in the NFL season. Why? Because we're 100 days from the NFL season. Who's going to have 100 completions first? Who's going to have 100 tackles first? We will chop it up, have a little football fun here in May next on The Hoffman Show.